Welcome to the Invest with Clarity podcast, where you will learn how success in investing, as in life, is the result of absolute clarity. Mark Pearson of Nepsis in Minneapolis, Minnesota, shares his passion for portfolio management and commitment to transparency and communication to allow investors to fully understand what they own and why, bringing them to clarity in their investments. And now, here are your co-hosts, Matt Halloran and Mark Pearson.
Hello and welcome to another Invest with Clarity podcast with Chuck and Mark today. They're going to be talking about the four worst words in investing. Who's going to take it away?
I can start if that's okay, Matt. I'm going to tee it up here for Mark. And Mark, it's interesting because you and I have avoided saying these four words as long as we've known each other. And these four words are things are different now. And correct. I'm going to pass it back to you. Why do we tend not to say that things are different now? I know we can talk about reversion to the mean and a whole bunch of things, but let our audience know those four words, why they've hallowed as the four worst words in investing.
For years, as first of all, we are not in the business of prognosticating, postulating, or speculating. We stick to process. And of course, different market cycles, and not even market cycles as much as economic cycles, are driven by different variables. And when markets, i.e. indexes, go up like they have in the last several years, you could really look at a couple of attributes that have driven the market up, not unlike what happened in the late 1990s. And of course, back in the 1990s, as all we heard was, this time it's different, this time it's different. And we always hear people say, this time it's different. However, in the 26 plus years that we've been managing portfolios here, for the first time, I'm actually jumping on the bandwagon and saying that, yes, this time it is different. And it's not a prognostication. The numbers are showing that, if you would like to opine on that, Chuck.
Absolutely. And I'm in full agreement with this, certainly. And I think that what we've seen, and you and I both are of the same ilk, where some of the verbiage we use in our industry isn't necessarily accurate, and we shy away from it. We shy away from mentioning the famed Greek letters. Even growth and value is muted. Who doesn't, and Buffett has said this, who doesn't want to own a company that grows its earnings but is of value at the time we buy it? It's just right. It's a conflating of two words that they try to separate, but you want both. And before we get to this great rotation, talk a little bit about that, because I think you do a great job in explaining that.
Yeah. First, number one, when you invest in a business, it's time invested in the business, not timing the business. That's number one, because there's too many variables that can change short term on you. So you have to be a long-term thinker about the businesses that you want to invest in. Number two, when it is all said and done, valuation matters.
Yes.
Valuation matters. The trick to that is, what is the valuation that one is willing to pay for future earnings of a business? Because quite frankly, when you invest in a business, that's exactly what you're doing. You are investing in the future earnings, i.e. stock growth or in dividends, when you invest in that company. And valuations have mattered. And Warren Buffett is a classic example of someone who invests in great businesses over time. And while valuations may be relative, he has a tendency to use a more traditional approach to valuation, i.e. a discount to the S&P 500.
Absolutely. And here is why, and I love that you brought this up. We're going to mention another term called the great rotation, which has been called for years, but you mentioned that word discount factor, right? And the discount factor is always driven off of the base rate, which is controlled by our friends at the Fed. And they have been reluctant for really 15 years to raise that interest rate too high, because it was felt that there wasn't inflationary pressures in the economy. So here we sit, and I think I want you to really dive into this, because I know you will. we do have inflation. We can talk about the reasons why, the pandemic, the spending of money by the federal government, but the Fed now is forced to raise rates. So how does the Fed raising rates to combat inflation actually bring to fruition this possible great rotation? Things are different now. Just tie those in, if you would. I know that's a lot, but I think you can unpack that.
Yeah, put this in layman's terms, to put this in our listeners, average listeners' mindset.
Yep.
What we're really saying is here is that risk is relative, okay? Yes. Risk is not absolute. It is relative.
Excellent.
Meaning then that you, most people, by human nature, common sense, the less money they have, the more conservative they are in how they invest. So if I have a ton of money and my portfolio has done really well and continues to do well, I'm going to scale my risk up. I'm going to take more risk. However, if money goes away, I have a tendency to pull back. I have a tendency to be more conservative in my investment choices. And I think that's exactly what's going on here, is that since the Fed is taking liquidity out of the system, since money is coming out of the system, people inherently are going to take less risk. This is fundamentally why you've seen many NASDAQ stocks go down 40, 50, 60% in the last 2 months, while value stocks, financials, energy, healthcare, and other miscellaneous types of industries, industrials, their stocks have not come down as much, because the absolute, the valuation, the earnings, the PE ratios, the dividend yields, not only are they lower than the S&P, but they also have pricing power. So as inflation increases, they have the ability to raise prices, so their earnings don't get affected by inflation. Companies that are not making money, that are public, that have to go to the markets to get more money to sustain themselves, people are going to be willing to give them less. They're not going to be as anxious to give them money, because the money system has tightened. The Federal Reserve has literally taken dollars out of the system. And so people inherently are going to become much more conservative. This is a situation we haven't seen for a long time. It's not to say we haven't seen the Federal Reserve raise rates in the past. However, when you have a combination of two things, one, Federal Reserve taking money out of the system, number two, interest rates going higher, and number three, inflation going higher at a time when your economy is at almost full employment and you have not completely opened up from a pandemic, you have multiple factors affecting the valuation of what money managers, investors are going to be willing to pay for a business. And that's not really happened before, because we haven't seen a pandemic since 1918. So exactly. We've never seen a supply chain build up like this. So the theory is, you've got all this inflation, you have all these things happening at a full employment, technically, with an economy that's not even fully opened up yet. So what's going to happen when the economy fully opens up and people get on cruise ships and people get on airplanes and people go start buying stuff, because the consumer's balance sheet is extremely strong right now? You have all the makings for an inflationary environment, and at the same time, having less money available to invest by the overall investment community, meaning that people are going to get more picky about the companies they invest in.
I love that. And that leads into this point here, Mark. That was excellent the way you described that. A lot of people are talking about this rotation from growth to value. Could we maybe switch the words, if that would be okay? And maybe saying from speculative to quality. And I've heard the terminology over the last couple of days that quality matters. And you got into some of the fundamentals of businesses. So let's take a look at maybe a company that's speculative. First of all, they're probably not profitable just yet. They're also, to financing the growth that they're in, they have to borrow money. Right. So they get the double whammy, right? If you want quality, you want earnings. They don't have it, speculative companies. And if you want companies that have quality balance sheets, meaning they don't borrow because they've had cash buildups over the years, they get hit by rising rates as those speculative companies borrow. And certainly they don't have the earnings that people are seeking. So talk a little bit about how you can own quality across the spectrum of large, mid, and small, and even growth and value. Talk a little bit about the metrics you use for quality and looking for businesses that you would define as that.
Right. First of all, let me push back a little bit on the term quality, because again, quality is relative.
Yes.
I've used this analogy before many times. Take a company like Walmart. In the 1990s, their stock was going through the roof.
Yes.
And when it all busted in 2000, if you looked at a stock chart of Walmart from 2000 till call it 2016, the stock, quite frankly, was not a great performer. In fact, it was pretty much flat. And what you had happen was you had a price to earnings ratio that went through a deceleration period. In other words, it was a stock that was in pure growth mode, trading at a multiple to earnings of 30, 40, 50, 60 times earnings. Amazon was in the same boat. And both of these companies, Amazon was a little bit different. They kept growing because they made some changes. But my point is that valuation is relative, and what you're willing to pay for earnings is strictly based on an opinion by an investor. Your hope is that you have processes in place that overall those opinions are going to go in your favor. And I think that's what they're doing for us now, will do. And here's why. We look at obviously a bunch of metrics when we make a decision to invest in a company. And not every company is invested in our portfolio, quite frankly, for the exact same reason. Two of the core pieces of companies that you want to own in the portfolio in a rising interest rate environment, in an environment where the Fed is taking money out of the system, and you have rising interest rates, you want to look for businesses that have price to earnings ratios that are below the S&P 500. You want to own businesses that will benefit from an inflationary / higher interest rate environment. And one of the metrics that we've always used for investing in businesses, no matter what the price to earnings ratio was, what's called the PEG ratio. And that's your PE ratio divided by the growth rate of the earnings of that company.
Yes.
And so these are metrics that we have used, we continue to use. And remember, we've talked about this on previous podcasts, a lot of the shifts that we've made in our portfolios have happened over the last 18 months. We made lots of money for our clients in high growth names, but we sold them as inflation and higher interest rates appeared to be coming in the future. And so a lot of the companies that we own right now, quite frankly, were decisions we made a year to 18 months ago, and we're benefiting from that now. But that has to do with PE ratio, has to do with PEG ratio, has to do with what inflation's going to do, and it has to do with what the Fed's monetary policy is going to be. How much liquidity will there be in the market for people to take on risk assets? And the hammering in the investments today are from the quote unquote higher risk assets.
Right.
Investors are not willing to pay what they used to pay for higher risk because the liquidity is shrinking in the system.
So very well said. Maybe I can unpack two more characteristics that I think you've used and have been prolific from a standpoint of their importance in the portfolio. So I'm going to lay these out here. I'll describe a little bit of them, but I want you to get into the details if you don't mind. We talk about, again, another kind of Buffett term is the term wide economic moat. And when I describe a moat, I try to tell people to go back. If you grew up in the 70s, you watch those cartoons, right? And you think of a castle that has a moat around it, which is usually filled with water. And sometimes there's alligators in there. And the people in the castle are protecting themselves from intruders. So talk a little bit about that. And the other one is free cash flow. Again, it sounds like a set of words that's difficult to understand, but I know you can explain both of those. And I think that, correct me if I'm wrong, those would be quality characteristics that one would be looking for in buying a business at this point in time.
Those are two other metrics that we use in our process of evaluating businesses. At the end of the day, for layman's terms, your economic moat really comes down to your competitive advantage.
Exactly.
What makes you better than your competitors? Why are you better at other companies that are in your business? And that's number one.
Excellent.
And so when you look at owning businesses, you want companies that have an economic moat. Yeah. Now you may say, okay, you own Citigroup. What makes their economic moat any greater than, let's say, a Bank of America? Mm-hmm. Maybe there isn't. However, you also want to look at how much free cash flow a company has. Free cash flow is the money that sits on the balance sheet every quarter after all your expenses are going out the door. But remember, and this is a classic example, Boeing just did this the other day. They had a bunch of non-cash write-offs.
Yes.
So they had a bunch of things that were not impacting them cash-wise, but it affected the earnings per share, but it didn't affect the free cash flow. And so when they announced their earnings, the stock was actually up, even though they quote unquote lost money on an earnings per share basis. Free cash flow is important because that's the money that they look to potentially give back to the shareholder who owns their stock. So companies can give money back to their shareholders one of two ways. They can either buy stock back. And when you buy stock back, what you're doing is you're taking shares out of the market.
Yes.
Which will inherently increase the earnings per share, which therefore reduces the price to earnings ratio. Let me say that again. When you buy back stock, you take stock out of the market. So when you have earnings, you don't have as many shares that you're paying out on an earnings per share basis. And in theory, if all things remain equal, your price, your PE ratio, price to earnings ratio, would actually go down in a stock buyback. The second way that you give money back to your shareholders, of course, is through dividends.
Yes.
And so free cash flow becomes an important component of looking at the businesses you want to own, because free cash flow inherently at one point or another, really one of three things is going to happen with it. Free cash flow is either number one, going to sit on the balance sheet and make the per share value of the company go up. Number two, it's going to get reinvested into the business, whether you make an acquisition or you start a new division, or number three, you increase your dividend. These are all positive things. And in a world where cash will be harder to come by, getting loans will be harder to come by because there's not going to be as much cash out there, free cash flow becomes, as well as that economic moat, become two critical components to the success of a company's stock price moving higher over time.
That was so superb and so well said. And I wanted to just bring up one other that you had said in the previous segment here, Mark, because I love the way you just described that. You mentioned the words pricing power and how that relates to inflationary pressure. So I'd like you to talk a little bit about a business that has pricing power and what that means in the underlying analysis of whether you're going to choose to own a business or not in an inflationary and rising rate environment, I might add.
Sure. Your easy ones, of course, are things like energy, right? Supply and demand. And when you're already at your capacity for supply right now versus demand, as the economy opens up, oil will have the ability to go up in price because it's a supply-demand imbalance. That's number one. That's one. But the other one, to use a more traditional example, is take a company like General Mills. The General Mills pays a nice dividend. They sell lots of food. They use lots of grains. Grains are going up in price as they do. Commodities in general go up in price. But you're still going to go buy your Cheerios. You're still going to go buy the products that are made by companies like a General Mills or a Kellogg. So as the price of or the cost of goods go up, companies have the ability to pass that cost on to the consumer. Therefore, it doesn't necessarily negatively impact their earnings.
Fantastic. You have done such a great job in, I think, unpacking what tends to be words that we use in our own industry here that people recoil when they hear. But you've done an excellent job as always on that. I wanted to get to one other thing here that I think is really important as it pertains to just the world that we live in. And we talked a little bit about this in our last podcast, but just this key understanding of an underlying business from your perspective, but then transition that to a client where a client, an investor is looking at their statement. They own a bunch of mutual funds and ETFs, and they see what I will call what seems to be erratic behavior in the marketplace. But right. But just when they understand that their money manager, their advisor has the finger on the pulse, this knowing what you own and why you own it, is it not of the utmost importance during this time where it could be different, that yeah. this chase takes the place on the mantle as number one of importance? So talk right. a little bit about
it's,
that.
Yeah, it's fundamental and it's foundational.
Yes.
Meaning I used to use this analogy a lot when oil went from $40 a barrel to $150 a barrel yeah. in the mid 2000s. And I said, people complained about the gas prices. I said, that's an easy fix. And they said, what's the fix? I said, go buy oil companies.
Yes.
My health insurance premiums, they're going through the roof. Buy insurance companies. Hedge your position against the inflation. You can't do that if you don't know what you own, why you own it, how much of it you own, and how it impacts your portfolio. So the fundamental idea, and I really believe we are in a transitional phase, not only into the types of businesses that people are going to want to own, but also the way people invest, i.e. active management versus passive management. And we've talked a little bit about this in the past. I think we're in the early stages of people are going to be wanting more active management. They're going to want to be in a position to take advantage of opportunities that are presented to them during periods of uncertainty. And active management allows you to do that. When you're passively invested, you don't have that opportunity. You basically set your investments and then you leave them go. And so the usual answer you get from a financial advisor is number one, well, we're long-term, or number two, we're dollar cost averaging. And in theory, while those may be great points and ideas, it gets harder and harder to dollar cost average the higher your portfolio gets in value, right?
Yes.
So the dollar cost averaging component actually has to come from within the portfolio.
Exactly.
Not from the cash you put in. You got $500,000, $250,000, whatever your financial position is, and you've got this portfolio. Hey, it's great when it goes down 10, 20% in dollar cost averaging, but most people only have 20, 30, 50, 100,000 dollar cost average when things are down 20%. They can do 1,000, 2,000, 5,000, and the impact right. longer term to the portfolio doesn't do anything. So the function of the dollar cost averaging strategy has to come from within the portfolio, where you sell positions to buy other positions on sale. That's why that's one of our sell disciplines. So that dollar cost averaging component enables you to be flexible and buy more of something when it's on sale. You can't do that when you don't know what you own and why you own it.
So very well said. And what comes, I think, today at a premium, Mark, and you just nailed, is the flexibility and also that transparency piece, right? We've said it for years, and not that it just falls by the wayside, but I think in this environment, correct me if I'm wrong, are those two pieces of the four key strategies to successful investing are going to be paramount. Again, the flexibility of the manager and that transparency piece as we walk through, which is going to be a murky period for a lot of people, unfortunately, that don't have those two qualities in their investment process.
When I came up with the idea of the four keys to successful investing and the philosophy, strategy, flexibility, and transparency, and we've talked about it a lot on other podcasts,
yep.
that these are the foundational components of successful investing. All four of those components play an equally powerful role. But in general, like anything else, one component at any given time could be more important than others. And longer yes. term, the philosophy and the strategy are always going to be extremely important. But flexibility and transparency come and go in terms of opportunity to take right. advantage of. You just don't know when it's going to happen. And that's why we say that the flexibility component and the transparency component allow one at a much greater level to what we often refer to as investing with clarity.
Fantastic, Mark. So let's wrap this baby up here. I know that you, as I, our golfers. Maybe we don't play as much because we love our work here, but I want to just end on this. We all know that the four worst words in golf, right? If you're especially on the putting green, is you are still away. You don't want to hear those, but in our industry, things are different now. Just finish, if you would, as to draws back to your conviction, as is mine. That is true. It's ringing true now. And it would be best for investors to actually consider now those four keys as they move forward with their investing.
Over the last several years, our clients have seen tremendous performance and success in their portfolios. And I don't generally like to talk about performance, so I'm not going to talk about how much. But clients have seen their portfolios do extremely well. And I have been speaking to our advisors saying, look, you have to have the conversation with your clients right now that at least for the foreseeable future, the kind of returns that they've seen over the last 3, 4, 5, 10 right. years are not necessarily going to be the case. Now, we hope they are, but we don't know. And so it's all about managing reasonable expectations as part of the process. And when you think about this time, it's being different. People have made so much money in their portfolio. If they had the discipline that we had, we sold a lot of these expensive stocks at much, much higher prices and reallocated them into businesses that were much lower in valuation. And that continues to pay off extremely well for us. And we believe that's going to be the case because the feds are taking the money out of the system. Excellent. There's going to be less cash, which means people will be willing to take less risk, and they're going to look for businesses that bring them greater stability, going to give them greater clarity on earnings growth in the future.
Superb, Mark. I think you wrapped it up excellently. And thanks as always for being on another podcast with me. I enjoyed it immensely. Pass it back to Matt.
Great job. Thank you.
If you have not subscribed to the podcast, make sure you click that subscribe now button below. That way, every time they come out with a new podcast, it'll show up directly on your listening device. And I don't know if you guys all realize this, but Mark and Chuck were on fire telling you the things that you need to know about investing. So if you know somebody who does not have the level of clarity that they need in order to truly invest with clarity, please make sure that you share this podcast with them. So for Chuck and Mark, this is Matt Halloran, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
The content discussed is for informational purposes only. It is not a solicitation or recommendation for any securities that may be mentioned herein. Advisory services offered through Nepsis, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor.